You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted to have you with us. We apologize for just a little bit of a late start. It's live radio, and we were the ones with a little bit of a technical challenge tonight.
We just shut the computer, so we're okay now.
So where are we? What's going on?
We got special guests tonight.
We do. And this is episode 101, kicking off a month of mayhem, memoir, murder, and a medallion winner. And tonight, it's all about mayhem. We have two guests standing by. Welcome Henry Park and Courtney Joyner. Court to his friends. And there they are. Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Gentlemen.
Hello. This was a bit of a horror opening.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we are so happy. Two good friends. We've known Henry and Court for 10 years at least.
Forever. Oh yes.
10 years at least. Mm-hmm. And you were both with us for episode one on August 4th, 2022. And here you are kicking off 101.
101, that's it.
So first we'll just say, Henry, where are you tonight? And then Court, would you answer the same question?
I am in Brooklyn, New York.
All right.
That means anything to anyone.
Very good. And Henry?
Oh.
Or Court.
And me, yes.
Oh, Henry, Court.
I'm sweltering in Sherman Oaks, California.
Oh, so.
It's pretty high out there, isn't it, Henry?
Yeah.
115 today.
115. Yeah, that's warm.
Oh, my gosh. That's one of the reasons we moved to New Mexico, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I yeah, out there. It's kind of like Death Valley out there.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're delighted to have you both with us. Henry, of course, is with us always the first Thursday of every month. And he is the talented author as well as film editor for True West Magazine. And Henry, you're going to kick off tonight with, as you always do, a little bit of your Henry's Western Roundup. What's happening in film and TV?
Well, we've got a number of new Westerns on the horizon. Besides Horizon Part 2, opening in limited theaters tomorrow is The Thicket, starring Peter Dinklage as a bounty hunter after evil outlaw Cutthroat Bill, played by, you guessed it with that name, Juliette Lewis. This is a co-production with Tubi. In post-production is Broken Trail, which is not a remake of the classic, and I wish they wouldn't steal the title, but it's directed by Johnny Remo, who produced the excellent Nick Cage Western, The Old Way. And it stars Rumor Willis as a young widow, the great Jeff Fahey as the notorious colonel who made her a widow, and Gabenka Ekanabi as a former Pinkerton. And Graham Greene is in there somewhere. Also in post is the Montana shot The Unholy Trinity, starring great Western hands Pierce Brosnan, the Sun was such a good miniseries that went on longer, Samuel L. Jackson, and Koryanka Kilcher. Now, for you Taylor Sheridan fanatics, here's a full update. Yellowstone Part 2 of Season 5 returns on November 10. Mm. 1923 was renewed for a second season, but we don't know when. 1944, sequel to 1923, has been ordered. And 2024, now called The Madison and starring Michelle Pfeiffer and focusing on a New York family tragedy in Montana, has been ordered.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Well, now, I don't think there can be any doubt that the biggest Western news story of the moment is that UFO Cowboys on the Roku channel has been renewed for a second season.
Wow.
I bet you guys always watch that. Am I right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Me neither, too.
Yeah, we will now.
Yeah. Well, you know those spook hunter shows where people go through dark houses with, quote, scientific instruments and get excited about things that you can't see? Well, these guys do that on horseback. And
in the news, about that. Yeah.
It's an improvement, hopefully. In the new issue of True West, I tackle the whole Kevin Costner Horizon debacle with input from a number of expert Western filmmakers. Yes, thank you for that. And writers connected with epics, including Michael McGreevy, who starred in The Way West, Bruce Boxleitner, who starred in How the West Was Won, the miniseries, film historian Michael Blake, Emmy-winning Western screenwriter Kirk Ellis, Centennial producer John Wilder, and author of The Westerners, C. Courtney Joyner.
All right.
And also in the new issue, we celebrate the 30th anniversary of Kevin Costner's Wyatt Earp with an in-depth interview with Dan Gordon, the original and first credited writer on the film. Oh, and I just heard about this an hour ago. To mark the 65th anniversary of Bonanza, there's a free online convention Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with panels and screenings and all sorts of stuff. Saturday morning, I'll be on a Social Influencers Discuss Bonanza panel. Just search Bonanza Online Convention to learn more.
Wow. You know,
Go ahead.
Costner was not supposed to ever do anything else with Yellowstone. But I thought I heard some sort of rumor that maybe he was reconsidering.
I don't know. It may be starting to sound good as he looks at Horizon 3 and 4. But I would kind of doubt it. He and Taylor Sheridan, I think, have locked horns too much, but I don't know anything.
Okay, all right. You know, we talked the other night about, the revisit to Wyatt Earp.
Yes.
So could you talk to us a little bit about the real estate involvement in there? Because, as I said before, I'm so used to cow wrestling and gunfights, but real estate grabs I wasn't familiar with.
That's right. And that was something I was not familiar with until I talked to Dan Gordon, who is the guy who wrote this from the start. And if anyone wants to get a sense of what his version was like, the novelization that came out, which you can find on, eBay or anywhere, the novelization gives you his whole plot, because he wrote it as a, essentially a miniseries.
Right. Okay.
And what his point was that our portrayals we've always seen of the whole Wyatt Earp gunfight at the OK Corral thing had been the law family versus a bunch of creepy thugs. And his point was that the creepy thugs were working for an organization that was very cleverly managed to try and take over all the property that they could in Tombstone, that most of the land there was not really legally owned. It was government property that people were essentially squatting on. And they had a plan to force everybody off. They encouraged anti-Chinese riots and stuff to burn them out so they could take over their property and resell it. So it was really a very involved and clever land swindle on the bottom of the whole gunfight.
It's one of those stories that doesn't come out very, I don't think it's ever come out. Courtney, what do you think? Has that ever been part of a Tombstone story film?
No, it never has. As far as it went, Henry, it was really, I think, a lot of how did Wyatt Earp get the unqualified support of the newspapers and all of that stuff. So a lot of that was playing out in the journal of Tombstone, and people weren't really aware of it. And essentially the Clantons were, like hired guns.
Right.
They were selling stolen cattle and all that stuff. But the Wyatt Earp and his brothers were no better. So This whole white hat, black hat thing. No, they're just, everybody's wearing gray hats.
Courtney, do you have anything you'd like to actually say about Horizon, since you were quoted in that wonderful article? Each of you, would you want to say a little something about Horizon?
Henry, you want to jump out of the gate?
Oh, okay, sure. I think that it really, what has been done, what we have seen, is a beautiful piece of work. But the problem is, I don't think a lot of people really got it, that they were seeing the first part, the first fourth of a very long and complicated story. And I think what is there is great, but it's not like a miniseries. It is like a miniseries, except that you don't get part two the next day or the next week. And I just hope people will be patient, because from what I have seen, I think everyone will really enjoy it. But you have to go in there knowing that you're going to have four stories and none of them is going to be finished for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, both of you fellas saw that movie, saw Horizon. I think both of you thought it was a pretty good show.
Yeah.
Right?
What did you think, Court?
No, it's Henry and my reaction was practically identical. It's not a matter of the content or the thing. And good Lord, it is gorgeously made. And the acting is very good, and some against type casting, which is great fun. But it is a presentation problem. If I had watched this at home on HBO, then I would be, you know, chomping at the bit for the next installment or anything else. But because it turned into a theatrical experience, it does feel incomplete as you're walking out of the theater.
How interesting. So the two of you are going to be sharing some space in October. I don't know that you're going to be sitting next to each other, but you are both going to
Lone Pine,
the 34th annual Lone Pine Film Festival. Tell us about this and what's coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Lone Pine Film Festival takes place October 10th through the 13th. It's in Lone Pine, California, by the beautiful Alabama Hills, which we've all seen in hundreds of movies. It's an amazing place physically, because you're right between Mount McKinley, the highest point in California, and Death Valley, the lowest. So you can see why it was so popular to shoot Western films there. And that's why they built this wonderful film festival. I should say, if anyone wants to find out lots of details, the website is lonepinefilmfestival.org. And you can find plenty more there. I'm going to be there with showing a Tom Tyler Western, Rip Roarin' Buckaroo, from 1936, which was shot there. And I'll be talking with Tom Tyler's niece, who lived with him for the last several years of his life, about what he was like. And, Court, I know you've got a lot more going on than I do there.
Well, they tagged me for three presentations. I'm going to be hosting the screening of Django Unchained, and our Q&A is going to be with the armorer, who's a very nice lady, with interestingly also is the armorer on Deadwood.
Oh.
Those are the only two Westerns she's ever done, but her dad, who was also a prop master and armorer and worked a great deal with Steve McQueen and Robert Wise, so they're both going to be there talking about, you know, the requirements of guns and things, which, given what happened with Rust and whatever, is a pretty relevant topic. Then I'm also going to be hosting a screening of a silent film called The Prospector, which was made by some students who got to know Bud Bedeker in the 80s, as a bunch of us did, because Bud sure made himself available. And the film was originally presented at Lone Pine. Burt Kennedy was there for the film, and the film is just absolutely tremendous. It's this silent short, and it knocked everybody out. And this is, and I always love this stuff, because you never know where certain accomplishments are going to take people. And the director ended up in daytime, and has been the director on both, I want to say, Days of Our Lives and General Hospital for over 300 episodes.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So, and he's won multiple Emmys for daytime stuff. But, yeah, he started by doing this silent short, encouraged by Bud Bedeker, and he ended up, you know, directing soaps. And the last thing I'm going to be doing, this will be on Sunday, is a presentation of a movie called Violent Road, which I'm really excited about because it's kind of, it's an obscure film, but it was the first American version of the French movie Wages of Fear.
Mm.
Remade by Warner Brothers, directed by Howard Koch, and with a great cast, Brian Keith and Dick Foran and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and all these guys. And it is, you know, the trucks going up through the Alabama hills. And since it was Warner Brothers, I did a little nosing around. We're going to kind of examine this. High Sierra is one of the more famous movies, of course, shot up in Lone Pine. And Bogart's, you know, car going up in the Alabama hills. The same assistant director on both films.
Oh.
Russ Sanders. So he, you know, obviously was there and familiar with the territory and everything. So I'm really excited about that because lots of people don't even know this movie exists. So that's going to be very cool. So three very completely different movies to present.
Yes. That's terrific. We are we're going to take a step away for just a moment and share a word about one of the places that you can find Henry's books. And I have Henry's book right here, of course. And here's Henry, the greatest Westerns ever made and the people who made them, and some other books of Courtney's that you're going to find there. And we may talk about these very briefly when we come back before we get into the main subject of tonight. So stay right where you are. When we come back, more with Henry and Courtney. We'll be right back.
Yay.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Hey. Park. See Courtney Joyner. Hey, we enjoy talking to you folks, and we're kind of switch a little bit to Courtney right now, and we got a little bio we want to read, and then you can fill in anything I left out, Courtney. C. Courtney Joyner is award-winning writer of fiction, comics, and screenplays. He has more than 25 movies to his credit, including cult films Prison, starring Viggo Mortensen, and Class of 99, directed by Mark Lester. Courtney was a graduate of the University of Southern California. His first screenplay was From a Whisper to a Scream, which starred Vincent Price. Jordan's other scripts have been included in TV movies for CBS, USA, and Showtime. He is the author of Shotgun Western Series and Nemo Rising. Tonight, we'll be taking an in-depth look at Courtney's two newest projects, the riveting film Quadrant, and the book Videotapes from Hell. Oh, video history of cult collectibles and crazy video covers. All right.
And he also submits a lot of wonderful stories, short stories and such, to anthologies. This is one of my very favorite, Six Guns and Sleigh Bells, A Creepy Cowboy Christmas.
There you go.
Oh, Courtney, all of those quick titles, and we have so much to talk about tonight, but is there anything that you'd like to say about Nemo or Shotgun at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Henry knows this, and so many people who come on your show, Bobby, you know, it's, you know, we have to now, unfortunately, as writers, we have to be prepared to be able to function in absolutely every single format that there is. just professionally, unless, you know, you're James Patterson or something, then the next thing you know, there's someone says, hey, can you write a game? Do you know how to write for a comedy series? Can you write a movie? Can you write a featurette for a Blu-ray? Can you write magazine articles? Can you, you know, on and on and on. And you have to kind of, you know, be a jack of all trades. And that's, you know, what all of this stuff represents. With the just with the books alone, I think, I don't know, because I contribute a lot of chapters and things to movie books and whatever. And I don't know, I'm somewhere around 40, I guess. And with the on-camera stuff and the commentaries, and this has nothing to do with writing scripts or certainly not with novels, but, you know, that's gone over 200.
Wow. And a lot of those you've done with Henry.
Yes. Whenever there's been a Western, the first time I was actually approached to do a Euro Western by a good friend of ours, Henry, we were at Monsterpalooza in Burbank. Right. And Henry was standing right next to me, and I said, oh, well, let's go. I want to get Henry in on this. Because I always, it's always better if you do one of these things to have another person and do it conversationally. I've done it solo, but, and, you know, I can prattle on forever, but it's not the same. It doesn't have the same impact. And you don't go down these interesting roads unless you have somebody there with you to bounce off of.
So,
did you want to talk about this new project?
Yeah, so let's talk about, and it's not out yet. It releases October 1st. So this is kind of a mock-up of best that I could do of the cover. I really want the cover so cool. I just wanted to have something to show tonight. So tell us about, I got to get the name right, Videotapes from Hell, a visual history of cult, collectible, and crazy video covers. Tell us about this project.
Okay, Stephen Jones, the editor, who's British and very, very, you know, high up on the echelon, he had been doing a series of books called The Art of Horror, which were just stunning reproductions of movie posters going back to the silent era and continuing forward, but also doing highlighting books and, you know, just cover artwork from all these tremendous artists, whether it was James Bama or Frank Frazetta or whoever it was. And he decided to do a third volume of this featuring the artwork on videotape boxes. And these are, you know, coffee table sized books. And so everybody thought, wow, this is a great idea, because all these wonderful artists, that cover, by the way, is by Graham Humphreys, had done great artwork for those boxes to get people to grab it off the shelves at Blockbuster, but nobody ever gave them a second thought. And so he put this together and asked folks just to write essays and individual chapters, highlight whatever the category was for the videotapes that were being highlighted. And I, of course, ended up, they asked me to write about Full Moon and those movies, but Stephen King is in there, and Richard Christian Matheson, and our good friend Pete Atkins, and it's just I think it's going to be wonderful. I have not actually physically seen the book. I've only seen a PDF of my section. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. So it's a great holiday gift giving. October 1st, it comes out. So think about.
Gift, right?
Yeah, we've already thought of a couple.
We got grandsons. Yeah,
we have some people in our family that we think would really love this book.
Oh, it's going to be terrific. And we're actually doing a book signing at Dark Delicacies on the 8th.
Oh, you are. Oh, wow. Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. Wow. We are going to take another very short break. And when we come back, oh my gosh, Courtney and Henry, it's all about this fabulous new scary wonderful film Quadrant. We'll be right back. We want to thank Blue Cottage Agency for being a sponsor along with Clicks by Madison, and here's a word about them.
Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer, Henry Park, and Courtney Joyner. As you see, I got my bolo hat on.
I was going to say, the chapeau is very becoming, Jim.
1880s, you know, vintage, not vintage, but 1880s. There you go, Jim.
For your listeners and readers out there, our protagonist in Quadrant wears a bolo hat. And we have to be here for the occasion.
And well, and I had a top hat, but we had too many issues at the beginning of the show.
Henry, go ahead. I mean, Courtney, tell us a little about Quadrant.
Quadrant. Oh, what a film.
Well, what would you like to know? You've seen it more than I have.
Here's a description that we found that we thought was fun and that we felt was right on the money. Let's talk about the newly released movie Quadrant. Here's a quote we found. Quadrant builds itself as an unholy blend of steampunk, which we love, horror, which we love, and sci-fi, which we love. And that's not far from the truth. Directed by Full Moon Features founder Charles Band, the story is about a virtual reality device, and I would like that device, by the way, that takes its users to where their nightmares and phobias are real. So, Henry, do you think, as a viewer of the movie, does that capture it?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it captures the setup. Of course, that's just the beginning. Because, of course, there's the Quadrant helmet is for a very specific purpose. It's not just for like a thrill ride, but I'll shut up because it's not my story.
Please.
So maybe, Courtney, tell us a little bit about the inspiration and also how did you get involved in the project? For instance, did you sit down one day and go, I got this idea, I'm going to write a screenplay, and then I'm going to go shop it around? Or did someone come to you and say, Court, you are exactly the screenwriter we need, and here's our idea? How'd it come about?
Well, it was a little bit more of the latter, but not so beautifully stated, you know. But Charlie Band and I have a history going back over 30 years. So, and I've worked for his company at different times in all kinds of incarnations. I think maybe 10 movies, 12 movies, something like that. And he was starting a new label called Pulp Noir. And we were talking, I was over at the office and he started talking to me about different ideas and things that we wanted to do. And he had always wanted to do a movie that was kind of like Altered States. That was something he was very impressed with years ago. But, you know, Altered States cost a fortune to make. And, you know, whether it was Empire Pictures or what have you, you know, those companies, just like with Roger Corman and people like that, just aren't set up for that kind of, you know, financial outlay. But we started discussing that the whole thing of being transformative through some sort of technology. And so we're kind of talking about that. And there's a coffee room in the office. And I wandered back there to get a cappuccino, and Charlie's son actually made it for me. And it's one of these big old, you know, gigantic multi-cylinder things, a lot of pipes and stuff. It's very, very old. And I'm there staring at this thing, and it had been in our old offices in Glendale years and years ago. And the Hungarian film director, Peter Sasdy, was working for the company then. And he, of course, tastes the blood of Dracula, which we all love. But he had also made Hands of the Ripper. And so both for Hammer. And I was like, man, you know what? And I'm staring at this coffee machine and suddenly it hit me, Hands of the Ripper. So I went running back to the conference room. I said, this is the way we do it. I was very happy that Charlie said, wow, okay, we haven't, that's an interesting, you know, tie-in here. How are we going to do it? And then we discussed, because Charlie always had wanted to do something that had a black and white component. So with sequences set in the past, even though they're fantasies, that gave him the opportunity to shoot that stuff. And Tom Calloway, our old friend, who's such a fantastic director of photography, he handled that. And I was very pleased with the way it turned out, because we have those sequences. We have sequences that are in full color and with demonic presences and, you know, monsters and things. And then we have the reality of life on the street in, actually, the movie is made in Cincinnati. And they all look different and give you a different feel, because it's supposed to be reflective of a different emotional state of each character. Mm-hmm. And they did it, really. And the film was shot very quickly and for not much money. And they just did an exemplary job, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said that was done in 5 days,
Five days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of top secret. So I wouldn't, you know, if anybody, if the people who are listening to this, kind of do this.
And that keep was, this is a big 5 months, right?
Yeah, yes. 5 months.
Yeah, 5 months. That's it.
I really, you know, when I posted,
we saw it twice. We think we thought it was a great film.
When I posted about the film, I said, you know, pop a bowl of popcorn and dim your lights and be ready for the quadrant experience. And I liked this film from the very get-go, that black and white, the way it opens black and white with all the scene credits, and you don't quite know, it looks like an old, you know, there's older street lamps and things, but you don't really know where could this be. And then we don't want to give a lot of spoiler alerts, but it starts pretty quickly where we recognize, oh, we're in this time period, and then here's becomes one of our main characters, and it's obviously, she's having her experience. And then we go into kind of a doctor's lab sort of room, somewhat dark, and we're in regular light. And then when the helmet goes on, the quadrant transporter, you have, you know, line. Kind of, it's not unattractive, but it's sort of garish neon sort of colors. And so those three lighting techniques, I found, Henry, did you find those as a watcher? I found them really riveting and helpful as to where are we going and what's happening, sort of silent, you know, silent help.
Right. It helps with the transition. So you, because you're going to such different places, so this gives you a cue that things are about to change.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was very helpful.
And that soundtrack is fantastic.
Excellent music.
It helps you know when to look away if you know you know what's going to happen. But if you're like me, you turn and I look at my husband, whose face stays totally immobile. He is watching every moment with nothing. And then he'll just say, you can look now. And he still won't look away from the camera, from the film.
that composer, Charlie's used him before on one or two projects. I just thought he was wonderful. And he just was somebody who submitted a demo tape and they said, hey, let's give this a try. And I know that Charlie Band went to him and said, I want something like the Italian composer Pino Donaggio. The kid knew exactly what he was talking about and just came up with this beautiful score. And again, you know, these are decisions that are made by the, you know, it's his company. So he can do it any way that he wants to do it. But we've known each other for so long and we had so many just, okay, this is kind of the way we want to go. And with Quadrant, I've always felt this way that in the past few years, horror movies have gotten kind of more and more tame and maybe they're just more cerebral and, you know, whatever you want to say, even though there are things like Terrifier or whatever that can be quite gory. But they've backed away from a lot of what we used to see in drive-ins. And certainly in the 1970s and imports from Spain and Italy and what have you. And I said, let's do that. Let's go that approach. And they did. And I was just thrilled because it's just not the approach that, you know, certainly bigger companies or whatever, you know, would do. And you're not going to see this stuff in something Universal's going to release. So I was just very, very pleased about that because, again, it just kind of separates us from the pack. Now, maybe I'm sounding too highfalutin, but I think it's true. And yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes the pieces just fall together. And in this case, they really did.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great horror movie. And, you know, thinking about it, you know, we got shirts on here. You got a Halloween coming up here pretty quick. You know, it seems like it's going to fit right in.
Oh, if there is a reproduction of the sort of steampunk looking, really gorgeous contraption, we would want one. I'm sure a lot of people would want that.
Fullerton loves their action figures and everything else. Sure. So, yes.
I was very interested in what you were saying about the kind of films we got away from, because it just now really struck me, you know, it really brought back the best of the sort of Mario Bava, kind of really elegant, very sexy, very scary pictures of the 70s.
That's this.
And also to to have some kind of a sensual content with gore is very unusual now. They've gotten kind of skittish about that. And we said, "Dad, the heck with it. Let's just go ahead and just do it, and just see how folks respond." And I'm just pleased that people are responding so well. And it's been nice. It's always fun to read nice things about your work and all of that. So I'm very pleased about that too. Because as I've, you know, especially after a couple of drinks, told everybody that I read it. This was my first movie, produced movie in 19 years.
Yeah. Henry, was there anything as a viewer that surprised you where you were like, and I know we don't want to do spoiler alerts, but did you kind of go like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen?
Gee, I wish I had a real good example for you. Obviously, you only get scared if you do see things that you weren't expecting. And there's a lot of frightening stuff in there, and as I say, a lot of very elegant, very sexy stuff.
Yes.
And I jumped a lot, so there must have been.
Well, also, too, when especially you're dealing with something being made on a budget, and you know, Henry, you and I both have had the experience of writing movies that had movie stars in them, and you know that type of thing. But if you're dealing with talent that is, I don't want to say unknown, but certainly not widely exposed or famous, certainly like these young actors that they found for it, you feel like you're kind of rolling the dice. Now, I didn't see dailies. I didn't see anything on this movie at all until I saw the trailer. And the film was in the can, you know, now. Mm-hmm. Charles Band and the DP called me multiple times from location to say, hey, we think this is going well. So that was very nice because it's also a little unusual. But then when I saw the movie and I did get to see it on a big screen, I was just so impressed with the performances by this young cast. And they really threw themselves into it and really pulled it off because, boy, you know, sometimes that can just be the death of everything. Mm-hmm. If the people in front of your camera aren't effective. And this group was very effective. I thought they were wonderful. And the girl who played Jack the Ripper, I thought was just
sensational. Yeah, she was great. They all were. I thought they did a nice job.
When you watched it, Courtney, for that first time, how did the blood look to you?
Oh, yes, I have been crowing about the blood. I think the blood looks great. Yeah, it does. And, you know, I always use this as this weird kind of example is that back in the 70s, Warner Brothers cosmetic blood tended to look very orange. And in fact, they have even retimed the color of certain movies, including Dirty Harry, to turn the blood from orange to red. And it really needed it. Remember that shot where Eastwood looks down at his pants, where supposedly he's been shot with a shotgun? And it looks like somebody threw orange paint on his trousers.
Yeah, good.
And so, you know, this is, and it is, you know, sometimes the light or, you know, different components can always affect how that's going to look on film. But boy, they just, Tom really just zeroed in on it. And when they did things like add colorizing black and white images, boy, they just did a fabulous job. And again, when we see Erin in 1880s London and she goes into the apartment where she sees Jack the Ripper, that is Mary Kelly's body. That is the actual photograph of her.
Yeah.
And they added color to the photo. So you could actually, you know, they added the blood to it. They didn't add the blood, but they colorized the blood because, of course, it registered as black in the original.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people look at it and it's just shocking because, you know, folks aren't aware of just how serious and horrible that really was. Boy, that picture sure puts it home.
Mm-hmm. So is there going to be a sequel?
Let's see. Is the phone ringing? No. So I don't know. I think, you know, we left a character open. She yes. is now, you know, off on her yes. own. So I don't know. I guess there is certainly a way to do it. I haven't been asked. So, you know, I have no idea for, you know, for all I know, there's going to be, you know, Quadrant 2 written by Aaron Sorkin or something. Just bypassed me completely. I don't know.
Well, I could even see a prequel because we enter the story that feels like there's already been some things that have gone on. And then when we see how it ends, we know that prequel would be very interesting. So that's just, you know, you can pass that up to whoever, you know. Bobby Bell would like a prequel and a sequel.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, I'm going to the office tomorrow to be in a documentary about Puppet Master. So,
oh, wow.
In which I was
yeah.
one of the, I don't know, architects or, you know, indentured servitude to, I don't know how you want to put it.
You have something you want to ask?
Yeah, maybe we better ask him how we can get a hold of him.
Oh, yes. Well, yes. So for both of you, how can we reach you? How do we find you? We'll start with Henry. Henry, how okay. do people find and follow you?
Okay. Well, they can go to Henry's Western Roundup or if they go to the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page. That's always an easy place to leave me a message. And of course you can find me in True West every issue. You can find my work at the INSP channel's blog all the time. I just put up a new article on the Searchers. And by the way, if you haven't seen the movie yet, don't read the article. I ruined the ending if you haven't seen it.
Henry, I won't say anything.
And Courtney, where can people find you?
I don't know, the grocery store. You know, I don't have a
Target at Halloween time.
No. Yes. I don't have a personal website anymore because I got too lazy trying to update it. So I gotta let it go. I'm on Facebook quite a bit, and you know, fortunately have things to post about and new books and that type of thing. So, yeah. And I'm always, you know, you can always find me there. And also too, whenever I do post something and it's for, you know, a specific company, such as Full Moon, you can always usually contact me through their own websites with their own emails and all that kind of good.
So here's a question for each of you. Henry, where do you like to write? Where's your favorite spot?
Gosh, I'm in my office in the back of the house where I can look out the backyard. What I ideally like to do is throw a bunch of bird seed and peanuts on the roof of the patio. And then I get to watch the critters romping around the lawn and so on while I write. So that's
so fun.
That's facing back.
Yeah.
Back the house, not backwards at the desk. Yeah.
And Courtney, where do you like to write?
Well, I'm sitting here. This is it. So, and let's see. Can I? No. Wait a minute. There it goes. Okay. All of that junk there, you see there, and I couldn't turn the camera around to show you, but that bookshelf, that's all me. That's all my work, those shelves. So,
we've seen that.
There's some scary stuff. Yeah. Somebody asked us one time about Courtney's place, you know. We told him, if he ever invites you over, don't go at night, only during the day. It's too spooky at night.
Oh, he's got fabulous things. Fabulous things.
You know, I mean, there we go. There's a mysterious island and the big heat right behind me.
Yes.
Sherlock Holmes, Terror by Night, and a very
like
nice
museum. Basil Rathbone.
And there's the Adventures of Robin Hood. Oops.
Sure. Okay. And now here's one more question for each of you. Is there a book or a movie that you've recently read or seen you would just recommend? And you don't have to say why. Just tell us. What do you recommend?
Well, I'm currently reading, where's the camera? There it is. Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid As I Knew Them.
Oh, cool.
In 1930, a Johnny Mack Brown film came out, which I think was, I know it's the first talkie, maybe it's been the first film about Billy the Kid. And the guy whose reminiscences these are, John P. Meadows, knew Pat and Billy very well. And was not a fan of the movie. And he sat down and wrote a bunch of articles about what they were really like. And it's just fascinating, not only about Billy and Pat Garrett, but just about the day-to-day life of cowboys living in New Mexico and in the desert. Just remarkable.
We'll have to get a hold of that. And Courtney?
Well, I just did a thing on the war career of Richard Attenborough, both in front of and behind the camera. So I sat down to both rediscover A Bridge Too Far, which is what this is for, which will be coming out in November. And also, I found a film that I thought was just fascinating that he stars in called, it was made 1961 by John Gillerman called Guns of Batasi, and it takes place in an unnamed African nation, and there's a government coup that switches the dominant figures in the government from white to black, and how that affects the colonial British.
Well,
and it's really, really good, and I had never even heard of it.
Yeah. Thank you both. I know I'm looking at time, and man, we are out of it. What a wonderful evening. Thank you both so much, Henry Park and Courtney Joyner, for being with us. Next week, we go into memoir, and our guest is Jane Littlebotkin with her book, The Pink Dress, a memoir of a reluctant beauty queen. It is actually going to come out, be released very shortly. She's already in the news, being interviewed all over the place. We're very excited to have her with us. So, I don't know that we have time for a quote. How about one? Just one, really fast. We hope that Mr. Sam Hassan will leave us on the air.
We had two really good quotes. We'll use one right from the movie, Courtney. Harry was talking with his partner, Meg, and she makes a comment regarding the quadrant. This is a medical device built for subjects to go through mental catharsis, not to use like a ride at Disneyland.
It's brilliant. I'm just floored, you know.
Yeah. Thank you both again for being with us. And until we see you all again next week.
It's always a great day.
Out west. Keep writing. We'll keep reading. Bye-bye.